Mr. Wesley, in his notes on Revelation 14, written in 1754, says of the two-horned beast, "He has not yet come, though he cannot be far off, for he is to appear at the end of the 42 months of the first beast." Number 3. Age of this power. There is good evidence to show that the government symbolized by the two-horned beast is introduced into prophecy in the early part of its career, that is, when first brought to view, a youthful power. John's words are, "And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb." Why does not John simply say he had two horns? Why does he add "like a lamb"? It must be for the purpose of denoting the character of this beast, showing that it is not only of a very innocent and harmless demeanor, ostensibly, but also that it is of very youthful power, for the horns of a lamb are horns that have just begun to grow. Bear in mind that by the preceding argument on chronology, our gaze is fixed to the year 1798, and the power symbolized was then a youthful power, according to the present argument. Question: what notable power was at that time coming into prominence but still in its youth? England was not, nor was France, nor Russia, nor any European power. For young and rising power at that epoch, we are obliged to turn our eyes to the New World. But as soon as we turn them to this continent, they rest inevitably upon this country as the power in question. No other power this side of the ocean is entitled to any mention in comparison with it. Number 4. Location of the two-horned beast. A single declaration of the prophecy is sufficient to guide us to important and correct conclusions on this point. John calls it another beast. It is a symbol in addition to and different from the papal beast, which the prophet had just had under consideration. That is, it symbolizes a power separate and distinct from that which is denoted by the preceding beast. This which John calls another beast is certainly no part of the first beast, and the power symbolized by it is likewise no part of that which is intended by that beast. This is fatal to the claim of those who, to avoid the application of this symbol to our own government, say that it denotes some phase of the papacy. For in that case, it would be a part of the preceding or leopard beast. If this is another beast, it must be found in some locality, not covered by any other symbols. Let us then take a brief survey of these symbols found in the Word of God, which represent earthly governments. These are found chiefly, if not entirely, in the books of Daniel and the Revelation. In Daniel chapter 2, a symbol is introduced in the form of a great image, consisting of four parts, gold, silver, brass, and iron, which is finally dashed to atoms, and a great mountain taking its place fills the whole earth. In Daniel chapter 7, we find a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a great and terrible nondescript beast, which after passing through a new and remarkable phase, goes into the lake of fire. In Daniel chapter 8, we have a ram, a he-goat, and a horn, little at first, but waxing exceeding great. In Revelation chapter 9, we have locusts like unto horses. In Revelation 12, we have a great red dragon. In Revelation 13, we have a blasphemous leopard beast, and a beast with two horns like a lamb. In Revelation 17, we have a scarlet-colored beast, upon which a woman sits, holding in her hand a golden cup full of filthiness and abomination. What governments and what powers are represented by all these? Do any of these symbolize the United States? Some of them certainly represent earthly kingdoms, for so the prophecies themselves expressly inform us. And in the application of nearly all of them, there is quite a uniform agreement among expositors. The four parts of the great image of Daniel chapter 2 represent four kingdoms: Babylon or Chaldea, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. The lion of the seventh chapter also represents Babylon, the bear, Medo-Persia, the leopard, Grecia, and the great and terrible beast, Rome. The horn with human eyes and mouth, which appears in the second phase of this beast, represents the papacy. and covers its history down to the time when it was temporarily overthrown by the French in 1798. In Daniel 8, likewise, the ram represents Medo-Persia, the he-goat Grecia, and the little horn Rome. All these have a very clear and definite application to the governments named. None of them thus far can have any reference to the United States. The symbols brought to view in Revelation chapter 9 all are agreed in applying to the Saracens and Turks. The dragon of Revelation chapter 12 is the acknowledged symbol of pagan Rome. The leopard beast of chapter 13 can be shown to be identical with the 11th horn of the fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7, and hence to symbolize the papacy. The scarlet beast and the woman of Revelation chapter 17 as evidently apply also to Rome under pagan and papal rule. The symbols have a special reference to the distinction between the civil power and the ecclesiastical power, the one being represented by the beast, the other by the woman seated thereon. There is one symbol left, and that is the two-horned beast of Revelation 13. On this there is more difference of opinion, and before seeking for an application, let us look at the ground covered by those already examined. Babylon and Medo-Persia covered all the civilized portion of Asia. Greece covered Eastern Europe, including Russia. Rome, with the 10 kingdoms into which it was divided, as represented by the 10 toes of the image, the 10 horns of the fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7, the 10 horns of the dragon of Revelation 12, and the 10 horns of the leopard beast of Revelation chapter 13, covered all Western Europe. See map of the four kingdoms facing page 64. In other words, all the Eastern Empire known to history and civilization is absorbed by the symbols already examined, respecting the application of which there is scarcely any room for doubt. But there is a mighty nation in the Western Hemisphere, worthy as we have seen of being mentioned in prophecy, which is not yet brought in, and there is one symbol remaining, the application of which has not yet been made. All the symbols but one are applied, and all the available portions of the Eastern Hemisphere are covered by the applications. Of all the symbols mentioned, one alone, the two-horned beast of Revelation chapter 13, is left. And of all the countries of the earth respecting which any reason exists why they should be mentioned in prophecy, one alone, the United States government, remains. Do the two-horned beast and the United States belong together? If they do, then all the symbols find an application, and all the ground is covered. If they do not, it follows first that the United States is not represented in prophecy, and secondly, that the symbol of the two-horned beast finds no government to which it can apply. But the first of these suppositions is not probable, and the second is not possible. But one conclusion can be drawn from these arguments, and that is that the two-horned beast must be located in the Western Hemisphere, and that it symbolizes the United States. Another consideration pointing to the locality of this power is drawn from the fact that John saw it arising from the earth. If the sea from which the leopard beast arose, Revelation 13:1, denotes peoples, nations, and multitudes, Revelation 17:15, the earth would suggest by contrast a new and previously unoccupied territory. Being thus excluded from eastern continents and impressed with the idea of looking to territory not previously known to civilization, we turn of necessity to the Western Hemisphere. Number 5. The manner of its rise. The manner in which the two-horned beast was seen coming up shows, equally with its location, age, and chronology, that it is a symbol of the United States. John says he saw the beast coming up out of the earth, and this expression must have been designedly used to point out the contrast between the rise of this beast and that of other national prophetic symbols. The four beasts of Daniel chapter 7 and the leopard beast of Revelation 13 all arose out of the sea. New nations generally arise by overflowing other nations and taking their place. but no other nation was overturned in order to make room for the United States, and the struggle for its independence was already 15 years in the past when it came into the field of prophecy. The prophet saw only peace. The word which is used in verse 11 to describe the manner in which this beast comes up is very expressive. It is anabinon, one of the prominent definitions of which is to grow or spring up as a plant. And it is a remarkable fact that this very figure has been chosen by political writers without any reference to the prophecy as the one conveying the best idea of the manner in which this government has arisen. Mr. G. A. Townsend, in his work entitled The New World Compared with the Old, page 635, says, "In this web of islands, the West Indies, began the life of both North and South Americas. There Columbus saw land. There Spain began her baneful and brilliant Western Empire. Thence Cortes departed for Mexico, De Soto for the Mississippi, Balboa for the Pacific, and Pizarro for Peru. The history of the United States was separated by a beneficent providence far from this wild and cruel history of the rest of the continent, and like a silent seed we grew into empire. While empire itself, beginning in the south, was swept by so interminable a hurricane that what of its history we can ascertain is read by the very lightnings that devastated it. The growth of English America may be likened to a series of lyrics sung by separate singers, which coalescing at last make a vigorous chorus, and this, attracting many from afar, swells and is prolonged until presently it assumes the dignity and proportions of epic song." A writer in the Dublin Nation about the year 1850 spoke of the United States as a wonderful empire which was emerging and amid the silence of the earth, daily adding to its power and pride. In Martin's History of the Great Reformation, volume 4, page 238, is an extract from an oration delivered by Edward Everett on the English exiles who founded this government, in which he says, "Did they look for a retired spot, inoffensive from its obscurity, safe in its remoteness from the haunts of despots, where the little church of Leyden might enjoy freedom of conscience? Behold the mighty regions over which in peaceful conquest they have borne the banner of the cross." Will the reader now look at these expressions side by side, coming up out of the earth, emerging amid the silence of the earth? Like a silent seed we grew into empire, mighty regions secured by peaceful conquest. The first is from the prophet, stating what would be when the two-horned beast should arise. The others are from political writers, telling what has been in the history of our own government. Can anyone fail to see that the last three are exactly synonymous with the first, and that they record a complete accomplishment of the prediction? Another inquiry naturally follows. Has the United States come up in a manner to meet the specifications of the prophecy? Let us see. A short time before the Great Reformation in the days of Martin Luther, not 400 years ago, this Western Hemisphere was discovered. The Reformation awoke the nations that were fast fettered in the galling bonds of superstition to the fact that it is the heaven-born right of every man to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience. But rulers are loath to lose their power, and religious intolerance still oppress the people. Under these circumstances, a body of religious heroes at length determined to seek in the wilds of America that measure of civil and religious freedom which they so much desired. In pursuance of their noble purpose, 100 of these voluntary exiles landed from the Mayflower on the coast of New England, December 22, 1620. Here, says Martin, New England was born, and this was its first baby cry, a prayer and a thanksgiving to the Lord. Another permanent English settlement was made at Jamestown, Virginia, in 1607. In process of time, other settlements were made and colonies organized. which were all subject to the English crown, till the Declaration of Independence, July 4, 1776. The population of these colonies, according to the United States Magazine of August 1855, amounted in 1701 to 262,000, in 1749 to 1,046,000, in 1775 to 2,803,000. Then commenced the struggle of the American colonies for independence. In 1776, they declared themselves a free and independent nation. In 1777, delegates from the 13 original states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia, in Congress assembled, adopted Articles of Confederation. In 1783, the War of the Revolution closed with a treaty of peace with Great Britain, whereby the independence of the United States was acknowledged and territory ceded to the extent of 815,615 square miles. In 1787, the Constitution was framed and ratified by the foregoing 13 states, and on the 1st of March, 1789, it went into effect. Then the American ship of state was fairly launched, with less than 1 million square miles of territory and about 3 million souls. Thus are we brought to the year 1798, when this government is introduced into prophecy. And now, passing over a little more than 100 years to the last decade of the 19th century, the territory of the United States government has expanded to 3,678,392 square miles, and its population has increased to about 70 million people. Its growth in all industrial pursuits, agricultural productions, cattle raising, newspapers, schools, production of the precious metals, and wealth of all kinds which pertains to a civilized people, has been equally remarkable, and furnishes an ample basis for the application of the prophecy. Number 6. Character of the government symbolized by the two-horned beast. Under this division of the subject, we find still further evidence that the symbol represents the United States government. In describing this power, John says that it had two horns like a lamb. The horns of a lamb indicate first, youthfulness, and secondly, innocence and gentleness. As a power which has but recently arisen, the United States answers to the symbol admirably in respect to age. While no other power, as has already been proved, can be found to do this, and considered as an index of power and character, it can be decided what constitutes the two horns of the government. If it can be ascertained, what is the secret of its strength and power, and what reveals its apparent character, or constitutes its outward profession? The Honorable J. A. Bingham gives us the clue to the whole matter when he states that the object of those who first sought these shores was to found what the world had not seen for ages, a church without a pope, and a state without a king. Expressed in other words, this would be a government in which the ecclesiastical should be separate from the civil power, and civil and religious liberty reign supreme. It needs no argument to show, and even the statement is unnecessary, that this is precisely the profession of the American government. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States reads, "The United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government." Article 6. "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States." The First Amendment of the Constitution, Article 1, begins as follows: "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." These articles profess the amplest guarantee of civil and religious liberty. The entire and perpetual separation of church and state, and what better symbols of them could be given than two horns like a lamb? In what other country can be found a condition of things which would meet so completely the feature of this symbol? Number 7. A Republican Government. The two-horned beast symbolizes a nation with a republican form of government. This is shown by the absence of crowns both upon its head and its horns. A crown is an appropriate symbol of a kingly or monarchical form of government. And the absence of crowns, as in this case, would suggest a government in which the power is not vested in any such ruling member, but is per consequence lodged in the hands of the people. But this is not the most conclusive proof that the nation here symbolized is republican in its form of government. From verse 14 we learn that appeal is made to the people when any national action is to be performed, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, etc. Were the government a monarchy, national questions would hardly be submitted in this unqualified manner to the people. And the fact that the appeal is here made to the people shows that the form of the government is such that the power is vested in their hands. And this is emphatically the case in the United States government, but not in any other government to which anyone could reasonably think of applying this symbol. This is another strong link in the chain of evidence that this symbol must apply to the United States of America. Number 8. A Protestant Nation. The two-horned beast also symbolizes a government which is Protestant in religion, or which at least is a non-Catholic power. It has been shown that the preceding beast symbolized the papacy, and of the two-horned beast we read that he causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast. But in all Catholic countries, the people voluntarily worship the beast, or obey the dictates of Catholicism, without being caused or compelled to do so by the government. The fact that the people of this government do not render this worship, till caused to do so by the civil power, shows that the religion they entertain is not Catholicism. As an almost inevitable consequence, it follows that it is Protestantism, for these are the only two religions of any consequence in Christendom. The United States is a Protestant nation and meets the requirements of the prophecy admirably in this respect. Thus again, the prophecy points directly to this government. Number 9. The Dragon Voice. After contemplating all the good features presented in this symbol, it is with pain we read that he spake as a dragon. Before entering upon a discussion of this topic, let us look at the points already established. It has been shown, number 1, that the government symbolized by the two-horned beast must be some government distinct from the powers of the old world, whether civil or ecclesiastical. Number 2, that it must arise in the Western Hemisphere. Number 3, that it must be seen assuming a position of prominence and influence about the year 1798. Number 4, that it must rise in a peaceful and quiet manner, not augmenting its power, as other nations have done, by aggressive wars and successful conquests. Number 5, that its progress must be so rapid as to strike the beholder with as much wonder as would the perceptible growth of an animal before his eyes. Number 6, that it must be republican in its form of government. Number 7, that it must be Protestant in its religion. Number 8, that it must exhibit before the world, as an index of its character and the elements of its government, two great principles which are in themselves perfectly just, innocent, and lamb-like. Number 9, that it must perform its work in the present century, or this side of 1798. And we have seen that of these 9 specifications, it can be said first that they are all perfectly met in the history of the United States thus far, and secondly, that they are not met in the history of any other government on the face of the earth. It is therefore impossible to apply the symbol of Revelation chapter 13, verse 11, to any other government but that of the United States. But after describing the lamb-like appearance of this symbol, the prophet immediately adds this, "And he spake as a dragon." The dragon, the first link in this chain of prophecy, was a relentless persecutor of the Church of God. The leopard beast which follows was likewise a persecuting power, grinding out for 1,260 years the lives of millions of the followers of Christ. The third actor in the scene, the two-horned beast, speaks like the first, and thus shows himself to be a dragon at heart. For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh, and in the heart actions are conceived. This then, like the others, is to be a persecuting power. And the reason that any of them are mentioned in prophecy is simply because they are persecuting powers. And if the United States is the power intended by this symbol, which speaks as a dragon, it follows that this government is to enact unjust and oppressive laws against the religious profession and practice of some of its subjects. Nor is this so improbable an event as might at first appear. We must remember that in the last days, the vast majority of the people of the most favored lands are to relapse into the low moral condition described in such scriptures as Matthew chapter 24, verse 12, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 to 5, 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4, Luke chapter 17, verses 26 to 30, and chapter 18, verse 8. And it is from such that those who live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 12. Evil is also threatening from another quarter. Roman Catholicism, which has grown strong through immigration, has fixed its rapacious eyes on the United States, determined to bring this government under its power. Votes rule here, and Romanism controls an immense suffrage, which it carefully manipulates to its own ends. With such a weapon in its hands, its power for evil is almost unlimited, for multitudes of unscrupulous politicians who, under their country's pay, labor not for their country's good, but for their own selfish aggrandizement, stand ready to help any party carry out any scheme, no matter how wicked, if that party will keep them in office. And in the Protestant churches, there is that which threatens to lead to equally serious evils: wealth, pride, selfishness, love of display, and worldliness in general are fostering a spirit of religious aristocracy fatal to godliness and true piety. But above all, the creed power is binding. Perhaps it may be said has bound the churches as in iron bands. Charles Beecher's celebrated Sermon on Creeds arraigns the whole church polity of Protestantism as ruinous in this respect to religious liberty. Though uttered many years ago, it is still growing more true each day. He says our best, most humble, most devoted servants of Christ are fostering in their midst what will one day, not long hence, show itself to be the spawn of the dragon. They shrink from any rude word against creeds with the same sensitiveness with which those holy fathers would have shrunk from a rude word against the rising veneration of saints and martyrs which they were fostering. The Protestant evangelical denominations have so tied up one another's hands and their own that between them all, a man cannot become a preacher at all anywhere without accepting some book besides the Bible. There is nothing imaginary in the statement that the creed power is now beginning to prohibit the Bible, as really as Rome did, though in a subtler way. In addition to this, we have spiritualism, infidelity, socialism, free love and trade unions, or labor against capital and communism, all assiduously spreading their principles among the masses. These are the very principles that worked among the people as the exciting cause just prior to the terrible French Revolution of 1783 to 1800. Human nature is the same in all ages, and like causes will surely produce like effects. Number 10. Great Wonders. In that part of the prediction which sets forth the work of the two-horned beast, we read that he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. In this specification, we have still further proof that the United States is the government represented by the two-horned beast, that we are living in an age of wonders none denying. See on Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, remarks on the wonderful achievements of the present age, and two plates of vignettes illustrating some of the leading triumphs of scientific and inventive skill. But this prophecy is not fulfilled in the great advancement in knowledge, the discoveries and inventions so notable at the present time. For the wonders to which the prophet had reference are evidently wrought for the purpose of deceiving the people, as we read in verse 14, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. This identifies the two-horned beast with the false prophet of Revelation chapter 19, verse 20. For this false prophet is the power that works miracles before the beast, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image. The identical work of the two-horned beast. We can now ascertain by what means the miracles in question are wrought. For Revelation chapter 16, verses 13 and 14, speaks of spirits of devils working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. And these miracle-working spirits go forth out of the mouths of certain powers, one of which is this very false prophet or two-horned beast.